Well, hello and welcome to this teleclass, which is about honouring the past and living for now. I'm Angela Anoff, owner, operator of Creating Order from Chaos and the Professional Organiser's Edge. And I welcome you to the call, those who are here live and those who are listening to the recording. Could be years down the track. Anyway, I'm going to be mentioning some code words throughout this call. And the reason for that is so that you can save up this professional development time and use it towards your APO accreditation. And I encourage you to do that. It's really worthwhile. So when I mention the code words, simply write them down. There'll be three of them scattered throughout the class. Write them down and I'll tell you what to do with them at the end of tonight's class. Also at the end, we'll have time for Q&A. So I won't be running away. I'll be here for all kinds of Q&A on this topic. If you have a question, write it down and we will have a good discussion. Finally, star 6 is the magic code if you need to mute yourself. If there are noises in the background, the dog starts barking, the phone starts ringing, the husband's arguing or whatever, hit star 6 and then star 6 again to unmute yourself. All right, so let's start talking about honouring the past and living for now. Who is this class meant for? It's meant for organisers who want to help anybody who has a tendency to live in the past and have too much stuff that represents the past as compared to living for now. Now, as organisers, we want to help our clients achieve their goals. And a lot of the time, those goals equate to living in the present. You know, it could be the simple things like getting their taxes done, or it could be, you know, getting to work on time. It could be sitting down to a healthy meal with the family. Sometimes, though, our clients will call us in to say, I want better storage solutions for all this stuff that I'm trying to hang on to. So who's this for? This is for the parents with, you know, children's art projects galore. It's for the sentimental people who are crowded out of their space. It's for the sandwich generation that have inherited stuff and are holding on to it while also trying to live an active life with their, you know, with their kids and family and so on. Who this class is not specifically aimed to help is people who hoard, because that is a whole other complex issue. And although some of the techniques that we'll talk about tonight and some of the ideas might actually help them, this is not a hoarding-specific sort of class. It's more for the, you know, the general client out there who has more stuff than they know what to do with. Okay. So living for now is generally the goal that I like to help my clients achieve. And when I'm talking to them about their stuff and about what they're specifically holding on to in their home, I like to leave them with the thought that your living room is for living, not for storage. And if you can apply that across other rooms as well, that's great. So if you think about all the things that you've got going on in your home, any average person, I really believe a good formula to apply is 80% that services the here and now, that gets you comfortably doing what you need to do, achieving your goals, achieving a happy home life, etc. And 10% of your stuff can represent your past, and 10% can represent your future. So maybe the future might be future craft supplies that you're going to use, future clothes that you haven't, you know, fit into yet, future hardware supplies that you might want to have a project on. And so with the past as well, 10% of memorabilia, you know, things maybe, that if we think about the typical things that people hang on to, it might be baby clothes, photos, trophies, you know, travel memorabilia, etc. So that is a little rule of thumb that I like to tell people about. However, we're not all, you know, programmed the same way. Some people like a different formula going on in their lives, and they're the client, and they get to say if they really, really want to keep a lot of stuff. Good luck to them. That's their choice, of course. It's up to us to facilitate a happy medium for them. If we're helping them to live their goals, we want to be thinking about what can we do with that stuff that they're hanging on to? How can we treat it? Now, people hang on to stuff. They get stuck with when the past takes over. And there's quite a number of reasons that this might happen. The one that comes to mind first is grief. Sometimes it is hard to move past an event and they're stuck in that place grieving. Now, grief doesn't have a timeline. It can last, you know, a long time. But if you find that it seems like an extra long time, people are grieving over and hanging on to their stuff, perhaps you could help them by suggesting they talk to somebody about it, their GP or a grief counsellor and so on. But that's, again, it's a very complex issue. But that's one reason, grief. People are grieving. Sometimes when you're grieving, you put stuff away, you hang on to things, you know, every single item that belonged to somebody is important, and you put it away. And you may have stopped your grieving so deeply and moved on, but haven't gone back to deal with that pile of stuff. It might actually be sitting in a cupboard or a box or even a room unnoticed. And meanwhile, that room, cupboard or box has been overtaken with the stuff and it's just too hard to go in there and deal with it. They might be ready to. That's lucky for them. There's people like us that can come and help them do that. Another reason that people hang on to things and get stuck in the past is habit. You know, they haven't really gotten out of their daily routine enough to take a step back and look around them and make some conscious choices about what they want to keep in their home. It's been a habit for them to hang on to everything. And just because it represents a time in their past without even questioning it. Sometimes it might be a sense of obligation. So this happens a lot with inheritance or with gifts. You know, it was given to me and I need to look after this properly on behalf of that person. And again, they haven't really stepped out of that that mode to question. And we can help them with some questions. Sometimes it's fear. The what if? What if I get rid of this and, you know, this thing from the past, this old telephone bill from 13 years ago, what if they come back and say, you know, you didn't pay that bill 13 years ago? So we really need to challenge the logic then behind some of those fears. And sometimes people are in transition mode. And this is usually around, say, holding on to children's clothes. Perhaps they haven't decided yet whether they really are, you know, going to have another baby or not. Maybe they're still wondering about that, or they haven't had that really important conversation with their partner about that. And the default system then it falls to hang on to it, you know, we'll hang on to it just in case. It might also be, for instance, in changing jobs. So if somebody used to live in the work in the corporate world, and they no longer work in the corporate world, they could be hanging on to the stuff from their past corporate life, just because then they're in that transition of, I don't know if I'm going back to it yet or not, and, you know, they're still in deciding. Again, we can help them to work through some of the issues, figure it out. If they really are in transition and don't want to throw it away but do need to hang on to it, we can help them with some strategies to put that aside so that it's not taking up their living space, so that it's not intruding on their daily lives. And, of course, there's remembrance. Some people do not trust their memories to work without the physical reminders of things behind that they have. And they really can't let go of something because of that reason. Again, we'll talk about some of the things to ask them about, and also ways to help them remember events, times in their life, people, etc., that doesn't involve hanging on to everything. And that brings me to the first code word. The first code word is living. L-I-V-I-N-G, living. The living room is for living. Okay. So let's have a look with your client. What are they honouring? Stuff is loaded with extrinsic value. So stuff, you know, can be, it can look like stuff to some people, and yet it can look like a lifetime of important relationships to somebody else. For an example, I worked with a lady once who had a large linen cupboard, and there were a lot of sheets in there, and we were going through the process of which of these sets of linen is going to go with her, because she was downsizing, significantly downsizing. So we had to get rid of maybe 90% of what was in that cupboard. So, of course, you apply the logical, method and try and figure out which is the best one, which is her favourite and all that sort of stuff. And I came across a sheet that was that used to be white. It was covered in blotches and stains and texture marks, and it wasn't folded nicely. It was just crumpled up, screwed up, and shoved into a corner. And I naturally said to her, "So this one can go, can't it?" And she straight away said, "Oh no, it can't." And proceeded to tell me why. The reason why was that her son, as a little one, had been allowed to use that sheet to draw on, to muck around in, and it represented a time in her life when she was quite sick, and he spent a lot of time in bed with her, drawing on the sheets, etc., and it was part of her healing. And it also represented quite a lot about her relationship with her son. So it's interesting, isn't it, that this sheet that really most people would have thought was a rubbish or a drop sheet of some kind really represented quite a lot to her. So it didn't get put in with all the sheets that were going to her new home. It did get put in with some memorabilia instead. Another example is an old glass that one of my clients has had, and it didn't match any of the other glasses. And this client was pretty particular about her collection of glasses, you know, and she liked quality and so on. Anyway, this one glass just didn't seem to fit in with all the others. However, it was the one that she remembered from her childhood, you know, drinking milk after school and so on. And that's how that glass got its special place in her cupboard. So the extrinsic value that people put on things can be quite a strong emotion. It can create a strong bond with a thing. And we've got to really accept that. People are going to have their own little quirks and so on. it's up to us to figure out what are the important things in their lives. And naturally, if you come across 15 of those sheets that are all stained, we're going to start to push and ask some different questions about, you know, how much is enough, etc. So what are people honouring again? They're honouring good memories, which could be, you know, photos, baby clothes, trophies, travel memorabilia, etc. And neutral memories. And those are the things like it might be school reports. They're neither good nor bad memories, but a record of your past, you know, a record of your children's past and so on. Or family history, things that represent them and their identity, which don't have necessarily good or bad memories, they just are. And people, of course, different people have different standards with regard to that. And then there's the bad memories. Now, bad memories, you might think, well, why would you hang on to that? And sometimes it's worth hanging on to a representation of a bad memory because it can be quite healing, and it's part of the healing process, I guess. And I'm thinking about perhaps even newspaper cuttings from traumatic events, you know, bushfires, floods, and so on. Those things are significant events that you've been through, and even though they weren't fun and they were quite distressing, it can be important to hang on to that memory and acknowledge it for a bit at least. So we need to be sensitive about some bad memories that people hang on to. There is one bad memory I recall working with a client who had been through a really difficult divorce, and in the process we were going through her things and she came across a little piece of paper, scrap of paper that she'd written on, and it was a phrase that her ex-husband had said to her, something along the lines of, you're useless, you're hopeless, you're never going to, you know, you're never going to get better, or you're never going to do something right, you know, those kinds of things. And honestly, my tears welled up, you know. I couldn't bear for this poor woman to hang on to this piece of paper. And I asked her, why were you hanging on to that piece of paper? She said, well, it's true. You know, I really, this is true. And she had taken her husband's words as gospel, had written it down so that she could remind herself that she was hopeless and so on. And I really, that was a moment that, you know, we shared a moment, but her and I, and she did ditch that bad memory in the end. But what if that client had kept it for a different reason? What if she kept it because it was a reminder of what a horrible husband he'd been to her, and therefore it was a healing opportunity? You know, every time she thought about, you know, sentimentally about him and so on, she could read that and feel better about the decisions she'd made. So everyone's different. We've got to be careful with handling people's memory and their past. Okay. Now, one way to help people with honouring the past and living for now is to reduce the volume of stuff and contain it. I mean, that's what a lot of us are very good at, is the decluttering process and containing it, as in finding the right container, storage solution, etc. And the eternal question that we need to ask our clients is, how much is enough? How much of all their possessions is enough? How much are they willing to, how much of their home are they willing to devote to the past? So some ways that we could do this, we could ask them to select significant examples of their items. What are the significant ones? So if we're thinking of children's artwork, for example, which ones are the milestone ones? Perhaps it's the first time a child draws a circle. and so on. Well, if you're going to keep those significant ones, it really helps if you've added a date to the page, you know which child did it, you know, and you could even, you know, keep a little book for just for those things. But if you're going afterwards and there's a massive big box of children's artwork, it can be really tricky. So along the way, we want to be sharing with our clients some strategies to reduce the volume in the future. We can contain things in a decorative way too. So we don't always have to shove things in a box and put it under the bed or into the garage to hang on to the past. Part of enjoying our past is seeing it, going through it, handling it and so on. And if you're doing that, that really is bringing it into the now. So I'm reminded of perhaps a jar, a glass jar that looks quite nice, and you might put all your concert tickets into it or something like that, so that you can look through it at a later date. Oh, yes, I remember going to the Neil Diamond concert and, you know, people were in the trees, etc. So helping people to see that they can actually be part of their home, these memories and so on, if they're contained in a creative way that they will actually enjoy. A framed gallery on the wall of the family tree. Now, this is good because sometimes when people have, you know, every single photo of every member of their family times 3,000, it can be hard to sort through them all, etc. Last month's class was all about helping people sort their sort their photos in photo organising. But a gallery of the people means that you select a particular photograph, a really special one or the best one, and put that on the wall, and so that each person is represented. Now, that's going to mean it's a lot easier to let go of the blurry photos, let go of the ones where, you know, you have 15 copies of it, and just, you know, you can enjoy it every single day instead of having to dig out a box and look at it once or twice a year. You can look at it every single day. Now, you want to curate the collection. So we're talking about reducing the volume. You want to select the significant pieces. You want to help them think about keeping the best so that the rest can fall away. Keep the best and the rest can then become less significant, the things that, you know, don't matter so much. And one way to curate the collection is to allow a memorabilia box per person. Now, if you've got plenty of room, maybe you have a really big box, or maybe you have three boxes per person. But if you have a contained sort of limit to what you have set aside per person, not only does that assist with the decision making and so on, but it also helps when those people grow up, when the children grow up and move out of home. That means that they can take their boxes with them. It also means that the people involved get to curate their own collection, because sometimes it's mum or dad who are deciding what gets kept, but the child hasn't had a say, and the child might actually think that something else is more important to keep. So it creates a bit of a conversation and a dialogue and some power for each person. Another strategy, we talked about reducing the volume and containing it, but another strategy which is really quite valuable is move it on to other family members. Now, this one can be hard because a lot of our clients hanging on to this stuff because they might feel they are the responsible person in the family, they're the ones who are responsible for keeping the memories alive, keeping the family history alive, etc. However, it can be really hard if your home's getting filled up with inheritances and so on, to live your live now when your home's full. The other thing that happens, of course, is that adult children move out and they leave their stuff behind. It's pretty common, and typically adult children move to small spaces when they first leave, and it's okay to leave stuff behind with mum and dad, and then they might move into a bigger space but never actually come back and collect the things from mum and dad. So with my clients, I like to get them to think about, well, whose stuff is this really, and who really needs to take responsibility for having it in their space. Now, one of the hardest things about this is letting go of expectations, letting go of the idea that, maybe the person that takes it out of the home won't treat it as well as you would, won't give it the love, won't pass it on to the right people, etc. That can be really challenging. But if they're willing to go down this path, it can be also quite good, especially for people who are interested in family history and so on, because they're really sharing their love of family history with family as well. So who's interested in the stuff? If you get some people saying, yeah, I do still want that box of whatever it is, set a deadline and ask them to come and get the stuff by that deadline. You can do it in a nice way. You could hold a family occasion, a family event, and say, right, guess what? Everybody's taking a box home with them today. The hardest part is the trust and the follow through. So good luck with that to our clients. Another way to help people honour the past and live for now is to repurpose some items. So again, this is a way to get things out of the cupboard. If it really means something to them, get them using it in the here and now. It also means that if you can honour something that's in the cupboard, something from the past, honour one of those things, it might make it easier to let go of the rest. So I'm thinking of perhaps a chipped cup. It might not be any good for having coffee anymore, but perhaps it can hold pens. Perhaps it could, even hold nails in the garage. Those sorts of things. And, of course, you might have heard of quilts made from old T-shirts or old shirts or baby clothes. They can be really, really nice ways to repurpose items. And, of course, it helps if you know somebody who either can quilt or can finish it off, because I've had clients who could make a quilt. Had one lady made a quilt cover from antique handkerchiefs. It was really pretty, but then she didn't know how to follow through. She wasn't, skilled in the actual quilting of it. So I put her in touch with somebody who could do all the finishing, and that was really successful. I've seen travel trinkets turned into fridge magnets. So even little teeny tiny things, instead of living in a box under the bed, can be brought out and actually made to be part of your everyday life. And again, the goal would be that now we can get rid of all the other things. We don't need to have every single trinket on the fridge as a fridge magnet. It's just a representation of the trip. Okay, the second code word is best, B-E-S-T. Enjoy the best stuff. Okay, one more way we can honour the past and live for now is to store things digitally. Yes, I know we can all get, we can all fill up the computer and all of that with digital stuff, and it might actually be another form of, clutter, but it's certainly a lot easier to store 1,000 photos digitally than it is in a box under the bed. So photos obviously is one way to store things digitally. And with this method, size really is no object because you can make massive things small, but time is. It takes time to do this. It takes time to set up the routine and the habit of making this happen. But if something is really worth keeping and they really need the space rather than the items, then digital storing is a good answer. So photos. I really like to get people to take photos of their children with their artwork. So the 3D construction comes home from kindergarten and you get to take a photo of the child holding the thing. You see the size of the child, the missing teeth, the clothes that they're wearing. So it's actually recording a whole lot more than just, you know, the child did this bit of artwork. It's a moment in time. And also with children's artwork, there's an app that you can use called Artkive, A-R-T-K-I-V-E. Archive, and you know, you can store your children's artwork digitally. Naturally, there's all kinds of things that you can do with children's artwork that doesn't involve keeping it in any way, but there are a couple of options to keep. Again, you want to be curating even these digital collections. You want to curate them so you're keeping the best, or at least just a representation of that time. Another thing that you can get your clients to do, and this is great for people who are aging or maybe they're not very well and they're declining in health, get them to record their stories. Now, it might be that they write them in a journal format. It might be that they write a story in the photo album, so that once they're gone, they've got actual, you know, they can leave their story behind. Or it could be that they record them vocally. You know, they speak and record the story. It can be really very valuable for them to do that because it can relieve a lot of the stress that they have about, I need to be able to leave a legacy to my family, and this is a great way for them to do that. You can also do it with photographs, you know, photograph a day in the life kind of thing, or use the photographs that are there to tell a story. And here's one way to honour the past and live for now. Create a shrine. Again, this really is about selecting the best and forget the rest. So a shrine could be anything from a shadow box with medals, certificates, you know, fishing gear, that kind of stuff, anything that's a bit 3D that could fit in a shadow box to hang on the wall. It might be a collection of your mother, a grandmother's brooches that you wouldn't, you know, they're not really in fashion anymore and you wouldn't wear it, but perhaps you would like to display them on the wall instead. So a shrine to your grandmother with, a piece of fabric from the favourite dress and the brooch pinned to that, framed on the wall, really says a lot and could actually replace all that, you know, other stuff that you've kept, that the clients kept, that represents the grandmother. There's another way, if you have a coffee table that would take a glass top, you could have a display underneath that, you know, of old theatre programs or, you know, old newspaper cuttings or whatever it is that you want to keep and have a shrine to. A collection of memories, a collection of items from a specific event might be something to have a little shrine to. Again, the quilt of the T-shirts is a really good example of a shrine. A folder of school memories could be an example of a shrine. So instead of keeping every single bit of work from school, you just keep one or two key pieces in a folder, so that one folder would have the 13 years or so of school life contained there in a very compact way, but a significant way. You know, it's telling a story without having to hang on to every single item. And then I mentioned a day in the life earlier. Sometimes it's not the significant events that people want to hang on to. It's the everyday things. It's the, I got up and made coffee and it was the year 1979, you know, and so on. Well, can't do that now, but you could create that now as a memory for, you know, the future generations. You know, look, this is what phones look like back in the year 2016. You know, we're getting a lot of those sorts of images now of what things were like in the past, and obviously things are going to continue to change. So have a think about how you can create a shrine that represents a moment in time and that perhaps means that it's significant enough that you could leave a lot of the other stuff behind and pass it on. So how about some questions that we could help our clients to ask themselves about all these decisions that come up? Because obviously it can be confronting. One question is, if a stranger walked in to your home today, could they see immediately what you value, what you as a person or as a family value? And in a lot of cases, a stranger couldn't tell. If the home is filled up with a lot of stuff, it's really hard to figure out what is somebody, who are they? What do they represent? What are their values? And what's their identity? So if you can get them to think about what's my values, what are my values, what's my identity, what do I believe in as a person, and does my home reflect that? We can help them to see a path forward, perhaps. Another question is, of course, how much is enough? That's one I love to use. And then also, how much time, space and energy is this worth? So if you've got a whole room full of stuff and it takes a long time to find things, or it takes a long time to dust things or to maintain the space or to pay the mortgage because you've got a big house, you know, then is it worth it? And what else would they like to spend their time on? There's some key questions there for people to really, you know, ask themselves and get some value from. Now I've come to the third code word. Third code word is choices. All about the choices we make. And that brings me also to our Q&A time. Does anybody have any comments or questions that they would like to make?
I reckon that create a shrine, shrine,
yes,
is a brilliant idea.
Yeah. Yeah, well,
you can do it. You could do it for quite a few people, and it would limit the space.
Throwing it
on the wall. It's excellent.
Yep. That's right, on the wall. Any space that isn't going to, you know, take up a whole room.
Yep.
Even in the garden, you know, you might find a few.
Yeah.
If you're remembering somebody who loved to garden, or they had, you know, old work boots or something like that, you could turn them into planters, and that's a kind of shrine to that person as well. Yeah.
I've seen some good stuff like that on Pinterest.
Oh, yeah.
Especially with coin collections, there was two ideas. There was the fridge magnet idea, which would be just super easy with a magnet, a set of magnets and super glue,
mm-hmm.
and also putting a group of them in a picture frame, and it looked beautiful.
Oh, great, yeah. I had a little look at Pinterest today as well, and I saw some shadow boxes with matchbox cars in them and things like that, you know. So obviously when the little boys have grown up, and the little girls, the matchbox cars that they played with can become artwork.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the next generation still has access to them because you can always take them out of the glass and play with them again. Yes. So, any more questions before I start give details of what to do with the code words?
Thinking about what you were talking about at the start with things like grief,
mm-hmm.
there are a few things when you're talking to clients and as you're getting to know them, there's always a no-go area, whether it's, oh, my mother gave that to me and my mother's died, and okay, so you just cannot possibly question that, or, you know, that's a religious thing. That that's another one.
Yes.
Mm. Yeah, so I really like the approach of, you know, creating a shrine type thing.
Yeah.
Shrine's a bit of a spooky word, but yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, it is a spooky word. And that, you know, it is hard for people to let go of something that was a loved one's and they've passed away. So often we will start with where it's easy, you know, start with the low-hanging fruit. We don't have to challenge them straight away about those things that are that really have deep-seated meaning. We can, you know, talk about the easier stuff. Perhaps it's school reports or something that has less importance to them.
You have to gain their trust before you start heading
towards
the grief side of things.
That's right, yeah. And even, I mean, you're never going to tell somebody they have to get rid of something that's really important to them.
No.
But if they were hanging on to every single thing that their mother ever touched, then, you know, you can start to ask them questions. If that is against the goal that they've said that they wanted to achieve.
Mm-hmm.
It all comes down to that, doesn't it? Why are you there? Okay. I'll tell you now what to do with your three code words. Email them to me at angela@creatingorder.com.au with honouring the past in the subject line. And I will then forward to you a certificate that you can tuck away ready for your accreditation application. And it'll be equivalent to however long this class is going, and you can use it for your professional development accreditation. So, thank you very much for being on the call. Thank you for those who are listening afterwards and so on. If you have an idea for a class in the future, please let me know. I'm always interested to know what you want to know about. And I will tell you what the next class is and tell you about a different date, because I'm going to be travelling on the usual date. So on Wednesday this time, Wednesday, June the 29th, the next class is Level Up. Take the next step in your organising business. It's going to be fun. Wherever you are in your business, there is a step to take that you can take to get to the next level, and we'll talk about all of those steps. So thank you. Have a great evening. Enjoy listening. Enjoy helping your clients to honour the past and live for now. Thank you and good night.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay, bye.
Bye.